Okay, my friend.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay. I'm feeling not only clinically competent, but somewhat technologically competent now. So thank you.
Wonderful.
All right. So we'll jump right in.
Okay.
All right. Well, welcome everyone to the J-Rock Therapy podcast, where over the last almost 2 years now, we've been discussing current events, mental health and wellness from a clinical perspective and providing resources, tools, and tips on how you can expand your mental health and wellness. Today, I have on a dear friend and colleague, Mr. Charlie Kale. Charles, if you
Hello.
want to introduce yourself, tell our listeners a little bit about you and anything you want them to know.
Sure. My name is Charlie Kale. I'm an LPC here in the Austin area. Graduated 5 years ago from St. Edward's University here in Austin, and soon thereafter met the lovely Janice, and we have been friends ever since. And we kind of bounce information off each other sometimes.
Yeah, definitely. It's really a good thing to have people in your field, and especially a field we've talked about this before, where on some levels we're interacting with so many people, but if you're in private practice in particular, it can be somewhat isolating because it's just you, yourself, and you for a good part of the day.
Right.
Yeah, so it's good to have other folks to collaborate with and consult with. So you prefer Charlie, right?
I do.
Okay, great. So Charlie, if you could tell us a little bit about the work that you do. And by the way, you mentioned LPC. Some of our listeners may not know all of the different alphabets that come with
Oh, boy.
our
All
grad
our acts.
degrees. Yeah.
Yes, well, I am a licensed professional counselor, meaning I'm a counselor, I'm a therapist,
Okay.
and that's about really all the clients need to know. Of course, we're always willing to go into detail if they have questions.
Okay.
But yeah.
And what area do you specialize in, or have you been working in over the last few years? Tell us a little bit about that.
I never expected to do this, but it seems that I've become a grief counselor. And it may sound strange, but I really enjoy that work.
Yeah.
It's grief is something that is, it's a very humanizing thing. Everybody is going to experience grief of some form at some point if they haven't already. It is kind of a unifier of humanity. We all know what that feels like, or like I said, or we're going to. And it's something that, as opposed to like a disorder
Yeah.
or a neuroses of sorts, grief revolves around an event, a concrete event that happened. It's just walking through that emotional minefield that is grief and getting through to the other side. And in that regard, it's a little more cut and dried than standard counseling.
Well said. A unifier of humanity.
Yes. It's one of the few things we all experience.
So good. You know, I think in terms of sort of like pop culture and maybe the Hollywood version, you know, what we see in movies of grief, I think that a lot of us typically immediately associate grief with death, with that kind of loss, right?
Right.
But my guess is that in your work, in your experience, there's probably an expanded version, an expanded understanding of grief that we all need to consider.
Well, when we started this, when I started working for the Grief Center, we had a lot of training, and one of them was to create a grief inventory. And it's not just, oh, well, my cousin died, or this friend committed suicide, or my parents died. It's also, I had this tragic breakup, or my parent died, or I lost this job. Anything that really just rattles your identity and takes something away from you that you thought was yours. And if we have a relationship, someone we love, whether it's divorce or death, there is some serious grieving going on. Even with the loss of a job, if your company folds or you get fired or laid off, you thought something was going to be a certain way, And now it's just not. And that's part of grieving. You have to grieve that.
Well said. So,
I like that you say well said. No one says that to me. I appreciate that. Now, are we pausing for effect or have I
oh,
lost?
no. I was just double checking to see if you were there as well, because I know with technology, I'm like, wait, Wi-Fi, be kind. So, no,
Yeah.
So, can we, yeah, no, really, I do feel that that was well said. And can we, from your perspective, can we, is grief ageless?
Grief is ageless.
Okay.
I think that any age can experience grief, even infants on some level can understand grief because they have losses too from time to time. But the older you get, for the most part, the older you get, the better you can deal with things because you've got that resilience that's built up over time and an understanding of how you react to things and how, if something's taken away, okay, I've felt this before, I can survive this. So yeah, it is kind of ageless.
That's interesting. Can you tell me more about infantile grief?
Well, it can be anything from moving, loss of a parent, divorce, sometimes even injury. If a child is at age two and suddenly they break a leg or they can't walk or something happens, they know something's changed and they have to deal with that. So in a smaller regard, that's grieving for them too. Although when you're that young, your normal is a little more malleable than an older child or an adult.
Okay, and so even with children, then do children experience grief? Okay, so this is a two-part question. What is your, can you please review with us the stages of grief and then let us know your thoughts on it? Because being a specialist, I can see you saying, I have some thoughts about that that may differ from what, is customarily thought of. So can you review that? And then I guess I'll ask the second part of the question after. I don't want to bombard you with my.
Sure. Well, now I do have some ideas that kind of they don't differ. They're just less well known, perhaps. Most people are familiar with Kubler-Ross and the stages of grief, the five stages of grief. I'm not discounting those. Those exist. Those are real. But what those are emotions, shock, denial, anger. What is it? Bargaining, depression, what's the other one? Acceptance, maybe. I forget. Because as we study those, we realize there's a great many more than five. There's if you think of any emotion that will come to you from grieving, that could be called a stage. Oh, I have to get through this denial stage. I have to get through this stage. However, Janice, those will kind of swirl around. Kind of refer to those as like the seven fogs or winds of grief because they come back again, and each time they seem to be a little easier to take. But as I've told some of my clients, like, I lost my parents, say, 14 years ago at this point. I still have days where I doesn't feel real. Like something, I'll see something and I'll think to myself, oh, I got to call mom when I get home and tell her. And then I realize, oh, I can't do that. So,
I'm sorry to hear.
but it doesn't mean that I can't, have a conversation with her about it. I mean, we are all connected on some level, whatever your belief system is, where there is a connection there. So I can just talk to her when I'm going to bed or later that day, whatever. But back to your question. I veer off topic. I'm sorry. Stages of grief. If you'll recall, as someone who's been through the coursework, John Bowlby from the attachment realm and
Love attachment stuff.
there's a lot of attachment. Well, he came up with something that is called the four phases of grief. And that is because there are four phases that we tend to go through that seem it kind of coalesced into this idea that there is shock, which is phase one, and that's like, when it happens, something has happened and you're shocked. and it doesn't feel real. We're trying to figure out what just happened. That can last a while, or it can be quick. And then there's the second phase, which is this kind of yearning. You know, we start having self-recrimination or questioning. You know, how can I have made this not happen? What can I do to fix this? And when you're talking about the death of somebody, there's really nothing to fix. They're gone. In that phase, that yearning phase, it's full of self-recrimination. It's full. I'm back. Are you there with me?
So glad you're back. I am. This is such a good interview. I don't know if you heard. What's that?
I'm afraid I guess I get a little long-winded. The recording seemed to shut off and kind of.
I don't know. You know, you know what, Kiel, you're my first guest. I've done them all myself, and they're usually like 15 to 20 minutes, so we should be okay. But we're gonna love that. Well, good. No, good. You're a great first guest to have. So I'm glad you're on. We're out. And I was saying something. I don't know if you heard me before it kicked us off. But I was, you said self-recrimination, and I was like, there's a vocabulary where we just need to pause. Tell us a little bit more about self-recrimination.
Self-recrimination. That usually comes up with the concept of, I should have done this. I should have done this. I should have called. I should have been there. I should have. Mm-hmm. Or I shouldn't have. You know, it's what did I do to cause this, when the very real truth is we did nothing.
Wow.
We want this to have not happened, so we look for a reason. And that second phase, that yearning phase, that's all about acceptance. And acceptance is probably the hardest part of this. Now let's see, there are two more phases. I'll run through quickly because they're rather quick. The third phase is disorganization. Mm-hmm. And that deals with paperwork, funeral, costs, ceremony, all that paperwork, all those insurance forms, all that stuff. Some people call it the wreckage, you know, the things left behind that we have to deal with. And that takes a while.
So Charlie, could that apply to someone grieving because natural disaster and now they have to reflect lives or divorce or disability or that kind of thing as well?
And it's all about picking up the pieces, you know, because there's usually a mess. With a divorce, there's paperwork, there's custody, there's just stuff. With a death, there's sometimes an estate you have to deal with. There's insurance forms. There's just a lot of paperwork and things to do. And when you're in the grieving process, that makes everything linger all that much longer. But we get through that and we get to the fourth stage, which is reconstruction. That's where we look around. And we pick up all the pieces and we put them away. And now we're going to move forward with our lives, get back into the business of living. And that is tough too, because people mistake moving forward with moving on. And if we've had a death loss, we don't move on. We don't leave them behind. We move forward. They're with us. We're not going to forget them. It's kind of like people think that the pain of grieving is what connects them to their loved one. It's really not. It's a necessary part of it because we are hurting. But people discover as they move through this that they can drop the pain. They can set that rock down and move forward because it wasn't the pain that's keeping us connected. It's the love. It's the memories.
Wow.
It's the spiritual connection. It's the emotional connection. And we don't lose that.
So we can put the rock of pain down.
We can, but it seems to be a very human thing to need to carry it for a while, for a time.
Interesting. You know, you were talking about your parents passing away and sort of how sometimes you just there's not always that distinction between what is happening in the present moment and what has already occurred. And I think that's something that happens with our brain, with time sequencing, not always knowing, because some of our experiences, so many of our experiences are wired into our central nervous system. And there's no calendar that's kept within that homework, right? But I noticed, like, even when you were saying that, and you mentioned your parents, and my immediate response was to say, like, oh wow, like, I'm sorry, or I hear you. Is there a better response when someone talks about any kind of loss or any kind of grief other than I'm sorry or I hear you or just silence, which is what I think people often stumble upon? They don't know what to say. And then sometimes it feels more harmful or hurtful for the person that's grieving because they're not getting anything back from people around them. The people around them don't
That
know how to hold space for that kind of
no,
pain.
that's a great observation, because people are uncomfortable with death. And I would say more so in our country than in other countries. We don't deal well with death here in America. We
Interesting.
feel uncomfortable. We want to make it go away. We want to get the funeral over with and move on. We want to like take our loved one, get them buried, get the headstone and move on. Where in other countries, other cultures, the Jewish culture, you sit ship, there is a long period of mourning. Other countries, there's parties thrown, there's wakes, there's ceremony, there's all kinds of really wonderful things where we all gather together and celebrate this life. And for the most part, we don't really do a lot of that here. Some do, some don't. It's up to the individuals. But I really wish our country dealt with death a little bit better. Because here's the thing, and you were mentioning this. People don't know what to say. And they say things that really don't help. Regardless of faith, if something comes up to you, your mother, your sister, your child has passed away, and someone comes up and says, well, they're in a better place. Or, well, it's part of God's plan. Or, well, at least they're not suffering. This doesn't help. It's coming from the heart. They mean to help you. They love you and they're trying to ease your pain, but it doesn't help, because when we're grieving, we need to feel those emotions. We don't need them pushed under the blanket, under the carpet. We need to feel them. We need to face them and feel them. And so if you know of someone who has lost somebody, to go up to them and say, oh, I'm so sorry. Well, that's okay. But it doesn't help the person. I think, and it varies from person to person. What you want to do is you just want to listen respectfully and say, I see you're hurting. What can I do? Something like that.
I like that. And that's something that would be age appropriate for any developmental phase. I see you're
Right,
hurt.
right.
What can I do?
Especially with a child, because they don't know what's going on. They're just trying to get through the day. And if you go up to them and say, it looks like you're really hurting. You're really going to miss this person, aren't you? Is there anything I can do to help you feel a little better? Would you like to talk? Would you like to, talk about your loved one? But, whatever they need to do, it's got to be on their terms, whether it's a child or an older person. Because we all know how pain feels, but we don't know the exact pain that person's feeling.
Right. So this is a big thing for me. So to say, I know exactly what you're going through. Not
Right.
only can it be dismissive, but it kind of robs that person of their individual experience.
And this is what I've learned, if I can mention them, the wonderful Austin Center for Grief and Loss.
Yeah, absolutely. Please do.
They've been doing such good work. They're a nonprofit here in town, and they do a lot of support groups. And the support groups, it's not that kind of therapy support group. It's a support group of the individuals who've been through this, and they're sharing how they're getting through things, how they're dealing with different problems. It's not that model of we just share our story and move on and share our story and move on. It's a connecting thing. It's a helping me deal with the problems I'm having. Oh, and you're having that problem. Here's how I've been dealing with it. And it's just all sharing. It's a really good dynamic. It feels very good. When you have lost somebody, you feel like you're the only one that has experienced that. And in some ways you are, because it's a very personal thing. It's very subjective. But if you sit down with other people who've lost a child or other people who've lost a spouse, there is a sense of this is my tribe right now, and we're all going to get through this together.
Yeah, that's great. I often say we're often feel wounded in community, and we often heal in a sense of community. So are you seeing your work change at all with the current climate of our world and of our country, with both pandemic and protests and politically inflamed rhetoric day and night? Are you seeing that grief work change at all, or do you have any advice for how to grieve what some folks are have feel that they have lost in this year in 2020?
That's a great question, because it has affected everybody. I mean, folks are coming to me with a standard counseling issue, but it's made much larger because of the pandemic, because of the election, because of social unrest. So many things going on right now. And someone, one of my wonderful clients, pointed out this term of, what was it? No, don't let me forget it. It was pandemic fatigue. Pandemic fatigue. Because we're all kind of staying in our little spots, and we can't really reach out the way we used to. And it's kind of grinding everybody. We're working into our ninth month of this. Yeah. So, you know, it is getting to people. And if you're grieving about something and you've got all this on top of it, well, then we kind of have to deal on two different fronts. We're working on this, and we're also acknowledging this. And depending on who you are, you could be directly affected by two or more of these factors.
Intersectionality, depending on who you are.
Mm-hmm. And not that we aren't all aware of it, but it could be directly affecting you on two or three different vectors, you know. Black Lives Matter, pandemic, the election, and grieving. That's an awful lot to take. Yeah. And I keep urging to everybody, reach out the best way you can, whether it's on Zoom or phone calls or social distancing for an afternoon, whatever it takes. Please don't give up on connecting with each other, because that's how we're going to get through this.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the connection matters. And then something you said earlier when we first started was that you go through waves of grief, and that it sounds like the stages are whatever you're experiencing in that moment. You reviewed them so nicely with us, but it could also take on other forms. But I noticed that you also mentioned that those waves tend to lessen or become more manageable as you let yourself work through them.
They can, because there is no silver lining to loss, but it does build resilience. It builds resilience in the, well, we're getting through this horrible thing. We're getting through it. And as we get to the other end of it, we realize we're stronger than we thought we were. So when the next thing comes along, we know we can deal with that. But like you said, the Kubler-Ross stages, they float around like a hurricane sometimes. You may think you're done with anger, and then you realize you're not done with anger. You might feel like the depression has lessened, and then you'll have a really bad day. It gets a little easier to take each time, but it will come back around. It's like stepping on a rake in the grass. It just flies up and hits you in the face. Because you smelled a perfume, or you heard a song, or the weather is a certain way that reminds you of a certain day that takes you back to a time. Little things like that catch you unaware. And first few months, even the first year of grieving, those things can hit pretty hard. So it's always good to realize they're going to happen, and that you're going to be okay. And because hopefully you have someone like me to talk to, or you have friends or family or anybody that's going to help you get through it.
That makes a lot of sense. And so realizing early on that the healing process, the recovery process, is not always linear. It's not always a straight line. It may be ebbs and flows in it, and it's not always unicorns, rainbows, and sunshine.
No, it's not.
But emotions, energy, emotions, sometimes the quickest way to get through them is to allow them to flow through us and to get curious about what they're telling us. So
that's
great. So there's a lot I could probably say about grief and loss as it relates to current events, but I do just want to touch on one thing before I let you go. And maybe this will be sort of a preview of coming conversation about anger, which is really, it's almost its own category, but I've enjoyed the things that I've heard say amongst colleagues of ours before talking about anger and what to do with it. What do you feel like is the biggest misconception about the emotion of anger? And in a microwave version, what do we do with it when it blows
Sure.
up?
Sure. The biggest misconception of anger is that it is just anger. Anger is what I like to call a snowball emotion. It's made up of so many little things, and it can be feelings of unfairness, feelings of resentment, feelings of regret. It all sticks together in this big snowball called anger. And the thing is, anger is one of the easiest emotions to access. It's way down in our lower brain. We can get angry real fast because anger is basically a defensive reaction.
The threat detection system, that amygdala, iron off.
Yeah,
Okay.
Bingo. And so the thing we need to do with anger is acknowledge it and tease it apart, because it's got so many threads in there. And just look at it and say, oh, okay, so a lot of this is depression. Some of this is, that wasn't fair. There's a little resentment here. And if you can do that, and just, that's where journaling comes in. You know you're angry. Scribble down a bunch of stuff and then start picking it apart and see what's hiding, because there's a lot hiding in anger.
Well, well said. Where can people find out more about you and your work?
Me and my work. Well, I am at charliekalecounseling.com and always willing to answer questions. The Grief Center of the Austin Center for Grief and Loss over on Burnett. Wonderful place. Go check out their website, texasgrief.org, I believe. If not, I'll correct that later. And it's just wonderful. If you're having grieving questions, you got to reach out, because grief is hard, but we can help you make it easier.
Nice. What the kill? That's our catchphrase. Yeah. Charlie Kill. Charlie Kill, thank you. This has been wonderful. I've learned a lot myself, really.
I'm so glad.
Okay, well, thank you for listening in. Rock your wellness, rock your recovery, rock your day. J-Rock Therapy Podcast. Know that you're not alone. Continue to reach out for resources and support. And if you go to the jrocktherapyinstitute.com landing page, you will find out more about ours truly, Charlie Kale, there, and his Psychology Today page and the work that he's doing in Central Texas. Thank you so much for joining us. Take care.
Thank you.